This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you. From daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
It's Sal Capaccio.
Sal Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
On WGR.
Let's get back to Indianapolis. Sal Capaccio is there. Much more news today from around the league. As Sal told us yesterday, Sean McDermott, one of the first to arrive. I'm not sure any other team personnel did media yesterday, but McDermott was there for the competition committee stuff. Today we get the GM, Brandon Bean, who, among other things, discussed the Khalil Shakir contract extension. All right, to Indy. Here's Sal Capaccio on the Wester hotline. Sal, what's your opinion of the Shakir move, and what did Brandon Bean say for you to illustrate how this went down?
Yeah, hi guys. So my opinion is that they locked up a player who they really like, that they developed. He has been on that same ascension that a lot of players have taken in this iteration of the Bills under this regime, which is year two to year three is usually a big jump for a lot of guys. That's what's happened here with Khalil Shakir. He was their team's leading receiver. He had 100 targets this year, over 70 catches. Hit a nice year, but he's also not in that stratosphere of, top-tier wide receivers and true number ones, I guess you want to call it that way. And they're not paying him that way. Now, the initial numbers come out of it can be up to $60 million over 4 years. Well, that tells me when it's worded like that, that's the agent putting that out there to make sure everybody knows he got the most money possible for his client, $60 million. I'd be stunned if he actually got $15 million per year, actually. That's the most he could possibly make. What it sounds like at $32 million, I believe it was, $33 million for the guarantees over 4 years, that's the number you really pay attention to, and that's less than $10 million a year. But then you have the what's reported as $18 million over the first 12 months. That tells me that signing bonus plus base salary probably will take a little bit of a hit on the salary cap for the Bills. This is not a contract that you probably could have lowered because he was a fifth-round pick going to last year of his rookie deal. You're going to have to actually add on to your salary cap. My guess is that you'll do that with how this contract has got to be structured, dealing with this type of player in that situation. But at the same time, it sounds like they got him for a rate where I think you could definitely live with if you're the Buffalo Bills. And two sides that probably wanted to be together, and it wasn't that hard to get done, to be quite honest.
Yeah, he is sort of in a pocket where, he's not a top tier guy. He's your slot receiver. He certainly matters a lot to this team, especially considering what they have currently. Even if they bring everybody back, he still would rate. So unlike say Benford, who on the other side of the ball is, I think, looking at a top of market type of contract. And let's say that has to be harder, but I would understand that maybe taking longer, right? When you're talking about those kinds of dollars, as opposed to this one, which is by the NFL standards, somewhat modest.
I agree. And I would tell you, like, the thing we've talked about a lot here, and we're going to keep talking about it, these guys who are all going into the final year of their deal. So there's five guys. The first domino has fallen, right? The five guys are Khalil Shakir, James Cook, Terrell Bernard, Christian Benford, and Gregory Rousseau. Let's just take it by, I'm not saying importance to the team. We could make that argument and whoever that is. Let's take it by how maybe easy it might be to get done. I think this was probably the easiest it could get done. It makes sense that it got done first because of that. Brandon Bean gave some insight onto that, and he said, look, you don't have all these conversations at the same time because that's too hard to do, but you get a feel for where everybody's thinking, and then you kind of focus on a couple of them, and then you see where it goes. And this one just started going in the right direction. It was trending in the right direction. They got it done. Next one for me might be easiest to do. It'd be one of two things. It's probably either Terrell Bernard, because I think if you really want to keep Terrell Bernard, he's the captain of your defense. You developed him. He's not probably going to make top of the charts money. He's not an all-pro. I mean, maybe Pro Bowl or whatever. That type of level player, that's fine. Unless he's seeking that kind of money, there's probably not a comparison that shows that he should get that. But he'll get paid pretty well, and probably two sides who want to make something happen. The other one that might be the easier one might be Greg Rousseau, because in that case, unlike the other guys, he actually has a really big number on the cap right now due to the fifth-year option being guaranteed. You can lower that significantly, right, and extend him, which might be something they just want to do before free agency.
Yeah, the hang-up there, Sal, is I wonder, and I don't know how specifically we have talked about this. I know I've brought it up a lot. Any Myles Garrett trade, an idea of acquiring Myles Garrett and getting him a new contract, assuming that one is warranted and wanted, if you're going to make that kind of commitment and trade the assets it would take. I wonder whether the Browns want Rousseau as part of that trade package or not. Can I tie up $35 million and $25 million in my two defensive ends?
It's a good question, and there's a lot of things that have to be moving parts here with timelines. If the Bills want to make a deal, I did ask Brandon Bean today, and you have to be careful how you do this, because not saying even from my end, but I know that he can't talk about players, right? I know he can't talk about Myles Garrett or Max Crosby or Micah Parsons, so I understand that. So I said, knowing you can't talk about players, what is the process right now if you're interested in players and names that you hear out there? He understood what I was saying. He even said, I know where you're going with the question, and he said those things are happening all the time, and you're not doing your job if you don't look into it. So he did not dismiss the idea of, you know, trying to make something like that happen. He didn't say they were aggressive trying to do it, but he certainly didn't dismiss the idea. Now, that being said, if it was to get to that point, considering what Andrew Berry said today, we're holding firm, we're not trading Myles Garrett, like, I mean, you may just have the timeline bulldog where you have to take care of Greg Rousseau in some way, because even if a trade happens, it ain't happened maybe till the draft, let's say, which is a month and a half after free agency begins.
Sal Capaccio with us. Back to Shakir, recognizing, as you said, his volume went up this year in year three. He was more of a, you know, better yards per catch player, but with almost half the catches last year, his first 2 years in the league. Can they get to a higher level than what they've been at, like what they were at this year with him, though? Like, what is more that they can get from Shakir, or is paying him this money commensurate with the season they just got? Like, do you think with Kincaid, with Coleman, we get right to it? There's got to be a higher ceiling, you know, down the field, whatever it is for the schemes, whatever it is for these two guys. I think that's mostly because of when they were drafted. I just wonder if Shakir is a player where you could see him putting up bigger numbers, different numbers. It's four touchdowns. I had two games this year over 72 yards.
Yeah, it's a good question, Mike. And I don't know if I should even want to expect that from him. He's not that type of player, right? I mean, like, it isn't kind of what he did this year. If you get four more years of Khalil Shakir doing exactly what he did this year, then you have a debate on, was that contract worth it? And I'd still say maybe it is, because he's very important to what they do. Because that's still, to this year at least, the leading receiver on the Bills. I think that's a really good question. Like, I don't know if you can expect him to be like 1,100 yards, right? 90 to 100 catches, something like that. That's a pretty big jump for a guy that, you know, this year I think might be kind of where I don't know if he's at his ceiling, but I can't imagine there's so much more there considering the traits he has. This is not, again, this is not a Justin Jefferson. It's not a Ja'Marr Chase. That is no knock on Khalil Shakir. Khalil Shakir is squeezing every bit out of what he has, and I think you're paying him to be the same player he's been and maybe a little bit more over the next 4 years.
Yeah, so what do you think this could mean to what they plan to do at receiver? For, you know, I mean, Shakir obviously locked up, necessary, and no argument. And I love it. And I love Sal, too. I want to say this while you're on with us, that they got it done before the market sort of resets, right? He comes in now as the 23rd highest paid receiver. I said in our first segment of the show today, I'll bet by the time the smoke clears and we get through like all the off-season stuff, he's somewhere between 30 and 40. Even. You know, we'll see about that because not everybody that's on that list ahead of him right now will keep their current contract. Maybe some guys will get released and get, you know, smaller deals. But nonetheless, what does his being locked up mean to the rest of the receiver room? Because, you know, Amari Cooper's a free agent, Mac Hollins is a free agent, and we'll get to Coleman here. I want you to address that part first, and then I want to talk about Coleman, because we really didn't do a lot of that yesterday when you were with us, and I thought the criticism of him being doubled down on by McDermott was very notable. Anyway, what do you think the offseason holds for a receiver?
Well, Keon Coleman's a big part of this answer, right, which we can talk more about what he said. And the general way, the general part of that is it comes down to, really, two guys and what you think they're, what they think they're going to get from. Keon Coleman, which is, are they super confident he will turn into that second-year player that they believe that he was turning into until he didn't like get back to that level after the injury, which we'll talk about? That's number one. If they are not confident in that, then they're going to have to do something more here. If they are, then I don't know how much, because I think they really feel that, you know, he can help him. The other guy is Curtis Samuel, and I really believe that the team believes that that injury, that turf toe injury he had, really hampered him a lot last year, and they never got around to using him the way they truly envisioned on using him. And they're going to have to make a decision on both these guys on, are we just going to run it back and hope that those two things happen the way that, A, Coleman, we expected him to keep ascending last year, and B, that the injury to Samuel, you know, doesn't hamper him and he can continue to, he can be better and what we expected from him. And then from there, I think Mac Hollins, you know, if you want him back, you're going to get him back. Mac Hollins loves Buffalo. He wants to be in Buffalo. I don't think it's going to take much. You might have to pay him a little bit more than you paid him last time. You know, you can pay him $3-4 million a year. That might be for what he did for you. I don't think that's too much.
That's probably fine. He outperformed that anyway, I think. Right? I would say.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, he didn't smash, I think so. But still, yeah, it was a bargain.
That's right. Now, before we get to Coleman, I will say there has been talk, and he was asked today again, Brandon Bean, about, do you need a field stretcher? Mm-hmm. And John McDermott was asked, do you need a field stretcher? McDermott's answer was, I'm always looking for guys to stretch the field both vertically and horizontally, right? Same thing he said last year. And we know this. Sean believes in using every inch of the field and getting the ball in the guy's hands. And he did say, though, they needed a little bit more down the field than they did last year. He said it doesn't have to be every play, but, you know, maybe they needed a little bit of that, which is interesting. And then Bean said today, I'll never turn away speed. But you got to be a football player.
Right.
His exact quote was, football isn't played on a track.
True enough.
Yeah. So Coleman, Sal, the thing that I think I'd want to say here is, considering everything that you just sort of backfilled on how they talked about him yesterday, I don't know what the whole story is there, but it sounds like they were let down by either his ability to bounce back from the injury, put the work in, be a pro. At the same time, you know, McDermott, minutes before.
What is Dax, are you?
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code FLEX at checkout. That's harrys.com, code FLEX. Enjoy.
For after is complimenting Cook for his dedication to his craft and how rewarding that is as a coach. And then, you know, I'm getting Coleman being kind of a letdown here. And to me, that doesn't sound like an organization that feels they have a bankable commodity there. So I'd be surprised if they really want to count on him. Because I think they seem to be very much about sending him messages at this point. I'm sure whatever has been said publicly has been said probably even more sternly to him privately. I don't know what didn't go right there, but they seem somewhat on a mission to like let us know that he needs to do more.
Yeah, it's interesting that it seems a little bit more than normal with that, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, they're not normally like that. They're not normally like what you just described.
Right, that's why it stands out so much. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and I just did, I just recorded an Always Game Day in Buffalo podcast with Matt Bovey. I'm going to post it as soon as we're done here, guys, so everybody knows. And Matt's words were that they both were critical, but McDermott was much harsher in his criticism. And I agree, kind of the way he approached that. I do think it's notable, though, that the way Sean talks about James Cook and how we all, I think, might remember him talking about James Cook after his rookie year, almost similarly, maybe not as harsh to Keon Coleman, but there were things about James Cook after his rookie year where Sean indicated, like, practice habits, really, you know, dialing in, attention to detail, showing up to work every day, putting in the work, and now look where he is and the way he talks about him. So I think they probably have it in their mind and even have said this, hey, like, we're not giving up on this kid. He can do this. But it does seem like they're being a little bit more poignant for whatever reason. And I also am not sure. Wasn't there a game last year, correct me if I'm wrong, Keon Coleman didn't play because he was late for a meeting or something earlier in the week, right? He didn't play in the first quarter. Didn't play the first couple drives. That's what it was.
Yep.
And I believe, if I remember right, that was the reasoning. So if you start to add that stuff up, it starts to make sense where they say, look, we need him to be more accountable, be more professional. But this happens with young players sometimes. They are highly regarded. They have these really good college careers. They've been always the best player wherever they've been. They come into the league. They start to have some success. They're feeling it. And then all of a sudden, this injury happens. And he just, maybe he doesn't do everything he needs to do to get back to what he needs to be at the NFL level because, A, he's never experienced something like that, or, B, he just thought that I'm just going to show back up and play, like, that's what I did my whole life. You know, if I missed a week or a day or whatever, I'm just going to be fine, and that hasn't happened. And I do think that there's a process. I know that people, that word's been overused a lot with people, but I do think they believe there's a process here that he needs to adhere to, that a guy like James Cook started to adhere to after his rookie year, and you see where he's gone to.
I really wonder, last thing on this from me anyway, I feel like I'm just taking the thing over here, but I wonder if Coleman, like, got hurt and just sort of felt like, oh, well, that's it for me this year.
Right.
You know, like, I mean,
Bulldog, you take that on top of hitting a rookie wall anyway. When did he get hurt? He got hurt in the Miami game, which was October, right? It was after the Seattle game. Right? He has the Seattle game was really good. He has that Miami game. He gets hurt, and then he's out for a while. He doesn't come back till, like, what, late November, whatever it was, maybe after the bye even. Yeah, maybe. And, like, a lot of times guys are already starting to hit rookie walls because they're just not used to the grind of the NFL. And you're right. Maybe it just was, all right, you know. And in the meantime, they traded for Amari Cooper, like, right around that time, right? They're adding Mac Hollins is getting some playing time. So you never know what a young guy is thinking like that.
Mac Hollins is already a great trivia question, and the season is barely over. But, you know, thinking about having the MVP quarterback in the league, and for Hollins at 5 to be your leading touchdown catcher is kind of insane. Like, I wonder over the years how we conflate Allen's MVP season with other Bill seasons. Like, I think we'll remember that Diggs was not on the team because that was so prominent in the Allen MVP narrative that Diggs was gone. Was Davis gone? I think he didn't they leave at the same time? It's so easy to forget about Samuel. I'm guilty of it all the time, like thinking about what the room looks like and will they draft somebody else or even sign somebody else. It's easy to forget about Samuel. Do you think they're right? Like you're saying, Sal, that you think the Bills' bet is that, or maybe was, probably was even, that he wasn't 100%. Like if he is 100% next year, maybe he gets hurt again. But if he doesn't, at 29, the player he's been, the player he is, what would you think there? Like, is he some? Would he be the maybe not the favorite, but like it's significant if you had like peak Curtis Samuel. I just don't know if that's realistic.
I wonder. I mean, you're talking to a guy here that's a big Curtis Samuel fan, going back to his time in Carolina and Washington. I've really always loved his game. And then last year I was just as much like anyone or guilty of or whatever of hey, he had his best year under Joe Brady, right? Joe Brady's going to know how to use him. I really bought into that because I felt that that would be the case. So I do think that there's a lot more there that they can get out of him. I didn't love the way they used him a lot when he came back. They're throwing these little screens down the line of scrimmage, but again, if one of your traits is being able to get down the field and catch the ball and then and get past people, it's harder to do when you have this injury. Another one of his traits is to catch the ball and then start making moves and running past people. They still try to do that with him. It just didn't go that great. So I think there's got to be a bit of a mesh here. I don't know if you could get necessarily to that ceiling that they necessarily anticipated, but I do think that they feel that it really hampered what he did. And then that, because of that, considering everybody else around him and Keon Coleman's and what happened with him, I just think that it kind of had a domino effect probably on the entire group. Yet here is the quarterback winning league MVP anyway.
Makes sense.
Rule stuff?
The McDermott seemed, yesterday this came up and it came up again today in an interview. There seems to be some support for touchbacks on kickoffs being moved to the 35. Do you like that?
I'm conflicted on this. I don't hate it because I think I really liked the new dynamic kickoff and what they're trying to do, and I like having more returns. But as the season went on, too many teams, I think, started booting it through the end zone anyway. So what was the point? You're getting it at the 30-yard line, right? I do want to see more returns. I think that that is an exciting play. I would like to see that. The 35 is tough, though. I mean, I put myself in these coaches' positions. I'm like, dude, the 35? Like, wow. Like, these kickers now kick them from 60. Right, like it's tough, but if that's what they have to do, maybe they have to do it. I'm conflicted because I do see the other side of it. I know it's easy to just say put the ball at the 35. Who cares? Make sure don't take the don't take the wimp way out and just cook it through the end zone. But 35 yard line is pretty significant to start a drive. Yeah. Right? I mean, so I don't know. Is there a compromise? Can we go 32.5? I don't really know what the answer is.
I'm more open to it. Last year, Sal, I was really, you'll remember, dismissive. I thought it would just be touchback city, and I'm trying to remember the numbers. I haven't been able to find it, but I saw something early in the week in advance of the combine, because of course the rules committee is meeting and all this stuff, and there's always going to be talk about tweaks and whatnot, and the kickoff is kind of center stage again for that. And I feel like they went up significantly. Like, I was kind of blown away. Not that I was wrong about something, but that coaches didn't take the safe way out.
That's right. I believe your data is correct, but I do think towards the end of the year and into the playoffs, the data started to shift. I have to go back and look. It went the other way. There were a lot more touchbacks in the playoffs.
All right, Sal, what's tomorrow?
Tomorrow is a lot more of the GMs and coaches. I was listening in on some guys today. Andrew Berry today, by the way, reaffirmed that they are holding their stance on, you know, Myles Garrett and not trading him. They don't want to do that. You know, and we wouldn't expect him to say anything else. Andy Reid was interesting today on basically they're not having Tooney play tackle next year. From what I gather from him, like, that's not going to happen. You know, they have some interesting decisions to make as well. On the Super Bowl, his quote was, "It was a bad day to have a bad day." So that was you have that there. And then Nick Sirianni spoke today, and it was really nice. He talked very glowingly about, you know, growing up in Jamestown and how it shaped him in Southwestern High School. So that was very cool. So we'll get more of that tomorrow. Head coaches and GMs, the players start arriving. I am sitting right now, guys, the way the convention center is set up. So everybody is – I went to a different part. It's a huge building. I mean, there's just huge halls in this convention center. It's massive. And downstairs in one of them is the combine where the podiums all are and Radio Row is and all of that. So I come upstairs, and I'm on the second floor, and there is like a good – I would say good – 60 yards here between me and this wall and a lot of space, and there's guys up here a little while ago, and they're literally running the 40-yard dash right by my table here getting ready to and doing three cones and literally while they're out here. And I'm standing here, and I'm doing the podcast with Matt Bove, and guy runs by me, and I'm like, "Hey, go Orange." He's wearing a Syracuse shirt. I'm like, "Who are you?" And he said, "Aronde." I was like, "You're Aronde Gadsden." So we started talking. They're literally like right in front of me running the 40-yard dash on the carpet over here.
At least there's a carpet. That's what I was wondering. It's right. Like a
I know, yes,
floor.
Yes, there is. Yeah.
That's dangerous.
Exactly right, yeah, yes. Right.
Gadsden is
pretty
an interesting.
Cool, though. That's what you get here.
He's an interesting prospect. I know people who really like him. Tight end.
Yeah.
From Syracuse. So.
He is. And I'll tell you, and I told him the story. We were live on the podcast, and I said, "Aronde, I'm going to tell you a story. True story." I said, "You know, your dad played for the Dolphins, and he killed the Bills. He was great. Now his dad is on WQAM in Miami. So I go on WQAM in Miami like once or twice a year. And 2 years ago, I remember I went on, and they bring me on. I'm on with him, maybe Joe Rose. I can't remember who else it was. And I said, "Aronde," this is Aronde Sr. I said, "Aronde, I just want to tell you before I talk with you on the radio, man, did I hate you, but boy, do I love your son." So that's what I sold. So it was kind of funny. He's a really good player. He's an interesting prospect. You're right. He was a wide receiver. He got hurt and missed most of his junior year. He came back for his senior year. He's a tight end and one of these new age tight end type. He's like a kind of a Darren Waller type of tight end, you know?
Love that. I mean, tight ends are really interesting. The Bills have two, so they're probably not in the market. But, you know, the top guys are so often on the good teams. Like, it's the win rate. Scott Barrett was tweeting about it. The win rate at tight end is interesting. Kittle and Kelsey, of course, over the years. Mark Andrews. Very good. Thank you, Sal.
Talk to you guys tomorrow.
All right. It's our man, Sal Capaccio, live from the NFL Scouting Combine in Indianapolis. His appearances are brought to you by New York's only outlet liquor. When you need to stock up, it's the place to buy a case. What's your outlet?
Well, you didn't mention Brock Bowers.
It was intentional, obviously. You're trying to drive his ADP down.
Look at you.
Did I use the lingo appropriately?
Yes.
That's a win for me.
You're not correct, but yes, you did use the correct lingo. That's definitely what you did.
That's all I really care about. I just want to sound right. I don't care if I was right. I just want to sound like, you know, I want to use the right stuff so the hipster fantasy people don't like look down on me.
Brock Bowers is tight end one.
Is there such a thing as hipster fantasy people, by the way?
It's redundant, actually. We're all hipsters. He's tight end one. He's one of the very top assets in all of Dynasty Fantasy, Bowers. 803-0550. So Shakir signs. Fine. There it is again. I got another F word to run by Bulldog after the update. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog. Sabres and Ducks. Pre-game at 6 here on WGR.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
Every week on the Moth Podcast, we share stories that are funny, strange, heartbreaking, and above all, true.
I myself have been married for 56 years. Unfortunately, to four different women.
It turns out the people I was looking for all my life is what you people would call nerds.
Follow and listen to The Moth on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.